Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week, wherever you are. I hope it's not too cold and dark and bleak if you are on this bit of the hemisphere. I hope it's warming up if you're on the other bit of the hemisphere. I didn't do geography, I'm not great at that sort of placing of where everybody is, sorry. Did history, guys, have to talk about history. Thank you so much for listening to season 10 of the Griefcast. It is hugely appreciated. I've been going to make it sound like there's a huge gang of people producing the show. It's me and my editor Kate. Thank you so much for listening. Basically, we're very, very grateful. I have mentioned it quite a bit this season, but I just want to let you know, in case you didn't know already, I've written a book. It's called You Are Not Alone. It's out January the 17th and you can pre-order it now. If you think you're going to buy it anyway, a pre-order is an amazing thing to do. A massive, massive favour to me. It really helps authors and counts towards the first week of sales. So if you think, oh, I probably will buy that anyway, please do a pre-order. I would hugely, hugely appreciate it. If you've done so already, thank you so, so much. I'm sorry I mention it every week. I feel very awkward and British about the whole thing. So I'm very sorry for mentioning it, but thank you very much if you have. Appreciated. This week, I'm talking to the brilliant writer, John Ransom. John is the author of the book, The Whale Tattoo, which came out earlier this year. It's a fiction book, so it's about grief. I guess it's not a traditional grief book, as we say in the chat. It's a fiction book where grief is in the narrative, but it's about lots of other things. It's about being queer and growing up in the countryside and family and relationships and water and our relationship. It's a really, really beautiful, sort of lyrically poetical book. And I have a lot of grief books to read, and I picked it up thinking, oh, I'll just start this. And then I got sucked in because I was like, wow, this is really, really powerful. So I can't recommend the book enough. It really is a beautiful piece. This is also a very special interview because John really hasn't spoken a lot about his grief. You know, he's talked more about the book. So I was really, really grateful that John chose to sort of talk more truthfully and honestly about what happened with both his parents and their losses. So yeah, this was a really touching interview, and thank you, John, for speaking to me. So John, who are we remembering today?
We are remembering my mum and my dad.
Your mum and your dad. So what their names? We start with that.
My mum was Mary and my dad is David.
And so who died first? Was it your mum that you asked first?
My mum is, I guess, the more complicated and the more complex one. She died quite suddenly. So she died first.
Right.
And that happened quite fast. She went into hospital on a Thursday and she died the following Thursday.
Oh my goodness.
So that was very, it was really baffling and very,
wow.
Wow. Again, very surreal. Yeah.
Was she, had she been ill, or is it just like out of the blue?
This is the one of the things that we've talked about with my sister. We've talked about this a lot. They asked her why she basically hadn't come into hospital before. So
she had bowel
cancer. And she hadn't been to the doctor. I mean, growing up, she's just... Do you know, I was thinking about this over the last couple of days. I can hardly ever remember her going to the doctor.
Right.
So when she finally got into hospital and my sister had called me and I turned up at the same, you know, well, not actually at the same time. It was about an hour later. The doctor asked her, the first thing he asked her was, why on earth had she not come to the doctor sooner?
Wow.
Had come to the hospital sooner? And she just said that she was afraid to. And... that's been one of the things that I guess I've returned to the most, this idea that she kind of was in all of this pain and she must have had some sense that she was really poorly, that she was too afraid to go to the doctors or the hospital. So when my sister called the ambulance for her in the end, and when the ambulance arrived, Kate told me this, my sister's called Kate, you know, they asked her how much pain she was in, and she said that it was worse than having children, and she'd had four children.
Wow.
So... it's not until afterwards, I guess, that I think, you know, more about how bad it must have been, how afraid she must have been not to have gone to the doctor or to have gone to the hospital. I think that's very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad, isn't it? Because I guess in her mind that was the better alternative. Whereas, you know, we might feel like, well, they might have helped you or they might have given you a painkiller and pain relief.
Yeah.
And, yeah, God, I mean, to have four kids and say that's like,
yeah,
I guess you're in a lot of pain. Like,
yeah, she was apparently it was terrible. And they operated right away, but they couldn't remove the tumour. It was too large.
Wow.
And she died the following Thursday. And it was such a different experience from my dad, because my brothers weren't there, me and my sister, we didn't know what to do, what to ask for, how to sort of manage the situation. I didn't know about hospices and things like that, that she didn't have to die on a ward and stuff.
Yeah.
These are all things that came later.
Yeah, I think it's very hard if it's your first big medical experience of someone. You know what I mean?
It was,
like you said, if she hadn't been, you know, if her cancer had been diagnosed previously, you would have been on that train already of like treatments and doctors and, you know, which way to go in the ward, and, you know, where the cafe is, like, but to just get thrown into that and be like, oh, it's cancer. And so I guess by the time she got in, her body was like, right, this is
her body was just completely it had gone septic, and she was literally dying.
Oh,
and she responded really badly to the surgery, to the drugs.
Oh.
One of the strangest things was when we saw her the first time after surgery, she looked like a completely different person.
Wow.
It was, again, I could use the word baffling and surreal quite a lot, because it was.
Yeah.
She physically appeared different, her face.
Wow.
She looked more like my grandmother, I guess. And it was actually a huge shock,
yeah.
And she was in and out of kind of consciousness for the rest of the time. We had very short sort of times with her to talk about things. It was a very strange time. Yeah.
So when she finally died that week later, were you with her when that happened?
No, because she was so tired and just didn't want us there on the ward all the time.
Mm.
They'd moved her onto a ward where basically they have people who are in a similar position to her, so there's no visiting restrictions,
right? Okay, yeah.
So we would just sit there and she'd wake up and be stressed that we'd been sitting there.
Oh.
So she didn't, you know, want us there, so we'd be going back and forth constantly. And she died in the night, so we just didn't, well, very early in the morning actually, but we didn't get there until after it happened. So, and then we had the decision whether to see her in the morgue and stuff, which we decided we wanted to. And then when we got there, we decided we didn't. So we didn't see her in the end, which is something, again, we kind of think about quite a bit.
It's hard, isn't it? I don't think there's not really a right or wrong. I've interviewed so many people, and sometimes people have said, oh, I went to see the body and I'm really glad I did. And other people have said, I wish I hadn't. I regret it.
Yeah.
Or at the time I thought it was great, but now 10 years on, I don't know why I did that to myself. Like, you know, you can only make the decision you can make at that time, and there's just nothing else you can do.
No.
And it sounds like if she really didn't want you sitting there, it sounds like she would have been she wouldn't have wanted you there in the night anyway. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds like she was so obviously still being a mum to you.
I think so. I think she would have been very stressed to have had us there. Because it was completely different with my dad. You know, he died with only me there. My sister was poorly with a migraine, and it was a completely different experience.
Yeah.
And I think the hard thing about my mum is that because I started writing after my mum died, and I hadn't written anything until she died.
Wow.
That was what started the whole writing process.
Wow.
I had all these stories in my head, and after she died, I was just. I felt really compelled to write them down, to start writing things down.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the writing journey started for me. But at the same time, I still think even today I'm kind of avoiding writing about my mum.
Yeah.
In this sort of strange way. I was asked, I just did I Write a few weeks ago, and I was asked on the panel if there was anything in the book that I felt, you know, I hadn't put in there, you know, that I would have like to have put in there, or for whatever reason hadn't. And I hadn't thought about that or been asked that before. And I realised that there's this big section in the book that I feel if I could go in and put something in, I would put more about Joe's mother in the book. But I feel that I just, at the time of writing it, I wasn't able to write about it, which is, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's funny because when you know, your publishers get in touch, and they say, oh, you know, we've got a writer, I'm going to send you this book. And you know, I think they said, oh, you know, yeah, he can talk about his mum. And I read the book, which is amazing. It is such a book. But the whole time I was like, oh, like, because I kept thinking, oh, it's, you know, because often when they approach me, it's like, oh, it's a book about grief. And it really is a book, this story. And I was like, oh, it's not. Okay, that's not the story that's here. It's not that. It's completely something else. But it's very present in the book, even though it's not there.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting that you say, oh, I would have put it in, because his mum is like, is there. Even though you haven't written it down, it's like this, there's a big space there that you're like, oh, I'm in the room with Joe and I can see no one is talking about that over there. Like this blank space. Like, I definitely got that sense of like something is not being dealt with, which actually I think for that character really worked.
Thank you. I think that's really, I'm really pleased that you felt that, because I think, obviously, at the centre of the book is how he can't deal with death, and, you know, he believes it's chasing him and so on. So I think it's really interesting that I wasn't kind of ready to write about these, some of these things, but it still kind of hopefully works for him.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
How long ago was this that your mum passed away?
My mum died 10 years ago.
10 years ago, wow. We say a lot on the show, like 5 years, 10 years,
50,
like those are big. They just come with this weight that you don't want them to come to, but they do.
No, it's 10 years this year, and it feels like longer, but it feels much, much sooner as well.
Yeah, it's the way that time is not linear. It can be next to you and 10 years at the same time. Yeah, I mean, it's a really beautiful book, and it, you know, say, listeners, it isn't one of those grief books where you have to like prepare yourself. Like, oh, it's a really sad story. Like, it is a sad story, but really, it's, you know, about this young guy and his life in this by the sea, trying to deal with who he is. And I think that's really interesting. Like you said, that it wasn't till she died that then it became a compulsion to write these stories down. Do you have a regret then? Is that what it is, that she didn't know that part of you happened?
I think that, again, I think about that a lot. She told us stories all the time.
Wow.
So we grew up with all of these stories. She read quite a lot, and I didn't hardly read at all. And she would always tell us stories, you know, growing up, all these. And she had an incredible imagination, which I think a lot of working class mothers do. I think they have to be really inventive and creative, because you can't pay for your kid to go and do something. Instead, you have to occupy them, I get, in a sense. So she was very, very good at telling stories. And I just think it was this kind of, it felt like I had this kind of urgency to do something more with my life, that I felt that perhaps I was just not doing enough. And I started writing these stories down, and I realized that they kind of, they felt very therapeutic. They really sort of helped me. I sort of read all, I went off on one and read lots of different things. I read a lot about Buddhism and quantum physics, all kinds of things, trying to sort of look for answers and stuff. But I found the most kind of comfort, the most sort of, I guess, safety in a way, it was with writing things down, writing these stories in my head.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Like, what the power of story and what it can do to you, especially if you're someone who expresses themselves that way. But I find it really interesting that, yeah, it took that moment to be like, oh, I am going to write these down. Because I think so many of, and I definitely, I've got better, I write stuff down now, but just live in our heads with these stories, and like, there's a world up there that you can just visit. It's like, it's quite nice up here actually, guys, like, everybody's alive, and oh, I'm having conversations and I'm working things out. But to write them down, I think you're right, when you start, it's like a different physical process that happens. Like when you're just imagining, I don't know, you kind of lose track of things, but when you write them down, it does become therapeutic. It does become like, I've processed something. There's something in the act of that that makes you go, oh, and that's how I felt about that, isn't it? That when you're in your head, you can't kind of separate them.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was 10 years ago. How long ago was it for your father? What happened there?
5 years on Saturday. Oh. So he died on Father's Day. So 5 years ago, it was the Sunday.
On Father's Day. Oh, John.
I know. That God. His story is completely different. He went to the doctors with a cough, and they ran a whole bunch of tests, and he had cancer everywhere at once. Wow. So he had kidney, liver, lung, and bone cancer.
Oh my God.
So he was really poorly.
Jesus.
Just right off like that. We went from him being, okay, to having all of that going on.
Yeah.
It was a strange experience. Because the specialist we spoke to tells people these things every day, unfortunately, it felt like he was announcing like a weather forecast. And it really annoyed me.
Yeah.
And again, my sister. But we were really fortunate. We got him on a drug trial at Adam Brooks.
Wow.
With this amazing woman, doctor, absolutely brilliant person. And he lived for a year.
Wow.
Originally, he was diagnosed that it would be a few weeks to like 2 months maximum.
Wow.
So that was really cool. We had a year with him, and it was like a second go with my dad, because it's a hard thing to admit, but I definitely loved my mum more.
Yeah.
I was much closer, and I think a lot of people don't like to kind of say those things out loud, but it's just how it was.
Yeah.
But my dad, we then had this kind of second chance with him and found out that he was actually an amazing person, which was kind of bittersweet, I guess, because you find this out quite late. He'd always been a really good dad, but I guess I was just so much closer to my mum.
Yeah, yeah.
It might be part of being, part of the LGBT plus community and stuff. So maybe it was for that reason with my mum. I was closer than my dad, even though he'd seemed, to be okay about these things, growing up. But so we got him on this drug trial and for a year, and we had this kind of incredible experience with him. We were there at every stage, blood transfusions, every appointment. We'd go for picnics and stuff in Adam Brooks and stuff, and it was like a really strange but really sort of important year.
That's incredible.
Then, yeah,
that's amazing, especially after like you said, what, like, yin yang to your mum's situation of like having no time, like that week being like taken from you, to then be like, oh, this person that we get a year, like, that's incredible. Like,
yeah.
And it's funny, I totally understand what you're saying, because I mean, a year is nothing, it's not enough time, but also when you compare it to a week, you're like, well, I'll take it. This, I'll have it. And obviously it's great that you have it, but at the same time, of course you can't help but look back and go, well, why didn't we do this before? But I think death and illness, like, just bring everything into focus, and it's very easy to tick along with people and be like, yeah, they seem okay, I'm okay, I'm living my life, they're doing their life.
Yep.
And to not, it's hard to be like, I wonder, if you'd said to your dad 5 years before that, like, we're going for a picnic and I'm going to talk to you, be like, oh, okay, like, this is intense. Whereas when like the clock's ticking, everything just becomes a bit easier. I don't know, maybe that's also a bit of a British thing. Did you find that, like, he opened up more, like, you were able to have more conversations?
Yeah, definitely. He talked a lot more about being a boy. He talked a lot about that, about being younger, which was really interesting. We got lots of stories that I'd never heard before about him growing up. We met quite a few people through him that he grew up with that we hadn't met before either, which was really interesting. And he never complained, not a single time. Truly, he never once said, why is this happening to me? Right at the beginning, he asked if if we would just be really clear about everything, really straight on. So we promised that we'd be really truthful. So when he said, you know, do we think this is going to work? What do I think happens after he dies? You know, things like that. I just had to say what I believe to be true, because yeah. we promised that we would just kind of tell him the truth. And he was surprisingly funny. I mean, like laugh out loud funny. And I really didn't know that about him at all.
Wow, that's amazing.
So that was really interesting. We spent most of that year laughing.
Wow.
Truly, we did.
And he hadn't been like a jokey dad, like particularly.
No, he wasn't, wow. no. And also, incredibly enough, he was in no pain at all until the last few days. He only went on to the morphine pack and everything that does it itself, you know, intermittently. He only went on that when we got to the hospice.
Wow.
And then he died quite quickly at the hospice, though. My sister had a migraine, bless her, which she thinks Dad planned. So she wasn't there, because I don't think she would have wanted to have been there.
Yeah.
But I was there, and that was a very strange experience.
Yeah.
To sort of be in the room as it happened.
Yeah.
I expected it was going to be a little bit like you see on TV or a film, but it's nothing
yeah.
like that. It was strange because I don't have children, and I don't really have an interest in being a parent personally. But at the time it was happening, for the first time, I felt, you know, what it might feel like to be a parent, because he sort of curled up into this kind of like slight ball on his side and stuff. And it felt like he was like I was the parent, that he was a small boy. And that was intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite intense, yeah.
It's these moments that you have, and I think, yeah, I completely understand, because birth and death in the human experience are these sort of, you know, significant markers where you kind of understand where you've all come from, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like,
and, it does make
sense. And you don't, you know, like you said, you don't have to be a parent, but when you are parenting your parent, you do suddenly see, oh, I see, we're all just these little people that were once babies, and like nobody knows anything. Everyone is just a tiny screaming ball of a person trying to exist. And it's birth and death. You know, when you hold a newborn baby, that's how you feel, like, my God, like nobody, like my parents didn't know what they were doing. No one's ever known what they're doing. Like everyone just you can just do it and there's a baby, that's it. Or so, you know, some of us are blessed to be able to do that, but it doesn't mean you know anything. And that's what happens, I think, when you become a parent. You sort of realise, oh, no one knows anything. And when you see your parent die, yeah, you're like, oh, I see. Like, nobody is invincible or magic or, like, we're all just humans that will die. And it's such a profound experience, but it is such a... The rest of your life never looks like that. So it's like a really weird moment in the rest of your life is, but you know, this everydayness that we all live all the time.
Absolutely.
Did it make you, I was just wondering, did it make you sort of see your mum and your dad in that way of like, oh, that's what my mum liked. Like, you know, like this funny, nice guy that you're hanging out with. Did you sort of see them as...
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what I think about that. I just, in some ways, the main thing I've thought about is how... you know, I hadn't connected with him until that point that he was so ill.
Yeah.
And that's a strange thing to kind of discover. But I guess after he died, I then became really obsessed with writing.
Wow.
And that's when I became obsessed with, you know, the death element in the book, that it starts with this idea that death follows people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's pretty much where it sort of launched from.
Wow.
From that moment. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, it's a really powerful book, and I really enjoyed it in a way, because it's not about grief or, like, you know, in that it's a book, it's like a, you know, a book where it's about many things. That's what I like.
Yeah.
So like, it's not like, oh, I see, it's just about this and that's what I'm learning. It's like, it's just messy, confused characters, and it covers lots of things. So I really enjoyed is a tough word, because it is a tough read as well at the same time, but not in that, I guess because it's so truthful. That was the other thing. I liked it. And also I was like, sometimes I felt like I had to like look away, you know, like, what? The way this life is so harsh and what's happening. Well, people should read it. So I don't want to give away too much.
It is quite harsh, but that's what I wanted to do. That's sort of my experience because I didn't, you know, I don't have a degree or anything. So I just... I sat down, you know, after he died and decided that I wanted to keep writing. I wrote the first draft on my mobile phone on the way to work, on the bus, back and forth.
Wow.
And I wrote all the places in the book are real places where I grew up in Norfolk and in Lynn. But it's obviously a fictitious story, fictitious characters. Yeah. And I wanted that kind of authenticity to kind of be part of, you know, the experience of the book, because it was my own experience growing up in that part of the world.
Yeah, so, yeah. It felt like that. You definitely got that sense of reality to it, definitely, because you were like, this is, like, John knows this. This is real.
Yeah.
especially the places.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So obviously we've talked a lot on the show about the grief of parents, but the grief of once you've lost both parents is a very, just a different room, I suppose. You just walk through to the next room. Like, how did you process that of like, okay, I am now, you know, I don't have my parents here. Did you feel it, a profound change in you particularly?
I don't know. I still don't know how I feel about quite a lot of it, I guess. Yeah. I think that my dad, because we had that year and we had time to kind of do things and talk about things, and I saw the whole process, you know, through to the end, is different. So I feel that I'm kind of settled with my dad, like everything's kind of a bit tidier. But with my mum, I still feel quite unsettled that I wasn't there, that I have these questions about, you know, how afraid she must have been.
Yeah.
I find that quite sort of sad, I guess. So, but I do feel, I guess I feel different as a person because we talked quite a lot. I used to talk to my mum constantly. So I do have this element of kind of like space that exists that's kind of really quite empty now that I don't have these same conversations. Like my mum would have got such a buzz out of, me publishing a book. She would have loved that. Although I don't know, someone did ask what would she think about the actual content in the book. I think she'd be cool with it, but I'll never know.
Yeah.
So they're quite strange to have these kind of like moments of like that I'm proud of, I guess, or what you might call a little bit of success that that they don't get to see.
Oh yeah, definitely. And again, that comes up so much on the show, of these moments and everything, you know, your life becomes a very bittersweet flavour. So, you know, everything becomes, you know, it's great. You're something happens, you think, oh wow, but there is always a part of you, and it doesn't destroy the happiness. That's the thing I think sometimes people struggle to understand. They think like, oh, you're just sad all the time. You're like, no, I'm like happy the thing happened. But then there's just like a slice of it that is like sad. That you're like, oh, like, you know, really nice cake, but like someone put like licorice on the top or something, because I don't like licorice. Like, you're like, oh, that taste is sad. That's a shame that's there. But it's there. Like, it's just part, like, I can't do anything about it. So, and I think, and like you said, it's those conversations where, and what's funny, I don't know if you have this, if you have a very close relationship or you did speak to them, you kind of know, like you said, you can say they would have liked this, they wouldn't, like, you kind of know the person. So you continue the relationship with that person, even though they're not there. And it's a strange, it's a strange thing to have this ongoing one-sided conversation, even though like you can write that character, like you know that character, you know what they would have said and done, so you can write it in your head, but there's always a part of you going, yeah, but I am writing it, you know, I think this is what they would have done. You know, people do surprise you. So
yeah, they do, definitely do.
Yeah, it's a strange, the success thing is strange, and especially is of what you've had of like wanting to be a writer and then achieving it, because that is like a big journey that lots of people try and don't make or don't attempt to finish the book on the bus, you know, like incredible. You wrote it on the bus on a phone.
I've been really driven.
Oh my god, really.
I think it's just I guess seeing your parents die, you think about your own death. I think it's inevitable, and I keep thinking that I kept thinking that I want to do something more. And it's turned out to be really sort of enjoyable. I mean, I've been hugely lucky. My whole journey has been incredible. I've met some incredible people who've made all of this possible. Writing, I think, is such a small part of publishing a book.
Yeah.
it's such a bigger thing. And there's so many people involved who've just been so gracious and really kind and interested in, you know, what I'm writing in this story that's come about through my parents dying. I mean, I don't actually think if they hadn't have died that I would have written a book.
Wow.
So I think that seems really quite strange, but yeah.
That's funny, isn't it? That, yeah. And again, it's like that road that you can look down, it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Of like, yeah. And I know exactly what you mean. Like, it definitely, my dad dying definitely made me a much more driven person. And we call it sometimes on the show, like the fire, like it's like you have this fire in you because you're just like, I don't care anymore about all this other bullshit. I don't care. Yeah. Like, I know what matters. Like, you're given this gift and it does. I don't think it lasts forever. I think I personally, it's like about, you get about 5 years worth of this, like, I know exactly what I need to do. Is this. And not everybody gets it, obviously, but I think a lot of people I've spoken to after grief, in grief, have just gone, it's like it just clears the decks, you know, you can just look down and go, I know exactly what I need from this situation and it's this.
Yeah.
But it's weird.
It is weird, and that's exactly how I feel, that you do. You have this kind of idea of what you want to do. Just, it was around a year after he died, I was standing outside a bookshop and I just thought, that is exactly what I'm going to do with my writing. I want a book on a shelf.
Wow.
And then that's literally how it kind of, it got, you know, driven. And I found all of these free events and stuff for kind of people with less money and less opportunities and things. And here I am sort of now. It's literally exactly five years later, 5 years on Saturday.
Not, it doesn't mean your fire's going out, don't worry.
No, let's hope not.
No, it isn't.
I hope it doesn't go out just yet.
No, I don't think that. Yeah. I think because as long as you use it to get you on the right path, then you're on the path. It's like getting you out of this fog that you've been in when you're like, oh, I don't know, maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll do... Well, you said you just go, oh, I'm going to do that. That's the thing. And then you can start. You're on the right road almost. Yeah. But yeah, it's... It's so weird, isn't it? It's so weird that like this awful sadness is wrapped up in this, you know, not joy, but like a part of yourself that maybe you didn't know or like you didn't understand that. And it's not to say like you can't have a happy life without your parents dying. Like, it's just this other side to grief that exists. Yeah. And I think, like you said, doesn't get really spoken about. You know, we kind of think of the TV and the Hollywood, like death looks like this, but we don't ever really... realize until you're in the club, oh, there's this other part of it, there's this multifaceted part of what grief looks like.
Definitely, the whole thing has been you know, there's been things that I knew nothing about, like, you know, we didn't have a clue how to arrange a funeral. My dad was incapable of doing a thing. When they told him at the hospital what was happening, he was like, so literally this was like a film, you know, when you have that standard answer, like, so she'll be, you know, better tomorrow kind of thing, like total denial.
Wow.
Like he like almost like he had not been standing beside us and had a completely different conversation.
Wow.
He simply couldn't accept it. So with the funeral and everything, that was all left to me and my sister, and that was again a surreal thing to arrange your mother's funeral and stuff, but we did it, we got on with it, and we just kind of, you know, went for it in the end and just, you know, had to sort of, you know, make these decisions and, you know, learn as you go along.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure a lot of people have to.
Yeah, I think that is, like you said, once you're first, when you're thrown into the swimming pool of dealing with death, you're like, oh, okay, I have to just like kick my legs, do I? Like, otherwise I can't stay here. How are you feeling about this, you know, the 10 years, the 5 years? Like, is there, do you feel, sometimes we say like, do you feel a bit more griefy at the moment? Sometimes it sort of comes up.
I think that lockdowns made things a bit different because we call them dead days. So we never were keen on the idea of, and again, I certainly don't want to sort of, you know, think about how other people see death. It's an individual thing. But we didn't like the idea of kind of people sort of passing over these kind of expressions.
Yeah.
We wanted to be very clear that to us it was death and being dead.
Yeah.
So we have these kind of dead days where we go to the beach with my sister, but with lockdown and stuff, that's been different. But Kate always says that in a way, every day is like a dead day, even if it is 10 years, because it'll be weird things. I think smell is the weirdest thing. That's what surprises me the most, when I will like go to take something out of the oven or something out of a drawer and I'll smell something from my life with my parents.
Yeah.
And smell's really clever like that, how it can kind of, you know, bring about memory. I find that really interesting. So I guess, you know, I get a surprise sometimes, or I'll be on the bus and someone will have a coat on that my mum had. And for a second, I literally can't breathe. Just for a few seconds, it like literally takes my breath away, because then I remember everything in one go. So I don't think we've gotten used to the idea or not gotten used to the idea. I think it's kind of, it goes with, you know, our like mood or the day or what's happening in the world. I think it's just such a movable thing, death, that you respond to it differently at different times. So the 10 years doesn't necessarily feel like a long time to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 20 plus in, so I like, I think 10 is not, isn't that long. And I always say, like, when you were 10 years old, you know, nobody would have said to your parents, God, you're still talking about him. Like, he's 10. Like, you had a kid, like, move out, get him out the house. Time for him to move on. Like, we allow time to exist in such different places. So with children or with a, you know, a house, you wouldn't be like, oh, who cares, you lived there 10 years. But with death, you're like, really? Still? 10 years is a long time. It isn't a long time. Like, you had that parent in your life for, you know, your whole life. Like,
yes.
10 years, it doesn't mean, that's the thing, it means nothing and it means everything at exactly the same time.
Time, yeah.
And I think that's the hard thing about grief, is like, grief for me is constantly two things existing at the same time and having to balance that in your brain of like, well, 10 years is a long time, but also 10 years is not a long time, and both these feelings are true. Did you have any, or have you had any therapy? Did you go down that road at all, or was the writing just enough?
No therapy. My sister did, she had a little bit of therapy. I guess I found it easier to kind of, you know, put myself down on paper and kind of imagine different things. Some of it's, you know, some of the things I wrote were kind of like little pieces about the past and things we'd done. But mainly I've just tried to use telling stories as a way to kind of like express the things I feel, I guess, but through the safety of a character.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they can, you know, kind of flip out on the page or whatever might happen to them, so I can kind of not have to. Kind of.
Yeah. Well, that's the joy of, the joy of good
making
writing
stuff up.
and good writing, because if someone can allow you to go on the journey that they're not doing themselves, it's very visceral to read, isn't it? And obviously therapy is such a personal thing, and I think as long as you have something, like, that's the thing, like, as long as you have writing or gardening or like knitting or therapy or talking to your best friend, like, everybody just needs an outlet for the things that live in our head. And I think that, like, whatever, if it works, God, that's all you need, isn't it? Something to work and make you feel better. With the book, like, I wonder if you wanted to talk about, like, how it's felt with it coming out now and having to talk about it. Like, has it felt like that's brought up stuff that you were like, oh, I didn't, you know,
It has a few things.
Yeah,
definitely. It brought up about how I felt that Joe hadn't kind of like explored enough about his mother in the story, because at the center of the story, what I think is kind of important, it is that it's these three women, you know, Dora and his dead sister and his mother, who's also dead. And I guess that that, yeah, it's made me... Yeah, I think people are interested in the background, how the writing's come about. Mm. So that's been okay to talk about. That, you know, I had, you know, my parents die, and that, you know, it started this kind of like writing journey. I've been okay to talk about that. I guess it's got harder when I've tried to talk about the details kind of experienced through the characters that I can kind of relate to because I wrote them.
Yeah.
But they're still not, I suppose it's because they're not really me, but they kind of are a part of me.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to try and pin down because I've tried to kind of distance myself from, you know, exploring these things at the same time as needing to explore them in the writing. So it feels a bit confusing almost.
Yeah. And it's like exactly what we're talking about, of like things being two things at the same time, of like,
yeah,
you wrote them, but they're not you. But they came from you, yeah. But it's not your life. And like, and then, and your distance from it, because you wrote a story in front of it to distance yourself. But obviously there's like a seed at the middle of it all that is your experience.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting with writing, isn't it? I think people really want it to be logical. Like, I wrote this because I lived exactly here and I had this experience.
So.
And then I think sometimes the sort of magic of writing is like, well, we can't make a straight line between John and this character. Like, there isn't one. There isn't a straight line because you have an imagination. So,
yeah, I think that's definitely a really good point. I think people do want it to be neat. Yeah. A lot of the times people think that Joe must be my story, that Joe is, you know, really me, which of course he isn't at all. But people do like things to be neat. And I think death isn't neat. Mm. And it is, for me, I've found it baffling and I suppose inspiring as well, that it's driven me to write something. So I'm constantly kind of confused by it, but I'm kind of, I'm accepting that I don't understand everything I feel. I think acceptance is a pretty important thing, that it's okay to feel the way I do. It's okay to not have all the answers. It's okay to, you know, want to write about something or not write about it. It's my personal choice what to share, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way of putting it, of like accepting I don't understand everything I feel. I think like that's so much part of the human condition, is like, well, I have a feeling, like, why? What is it? What does it mean? And, you know, sometimes you find an answer. And that, so then you think, right, okay, that's it. I have to always look for an answer. I feel this. It's hunger. I needed to eat. And then other times, like, grief doesn't follow that plot line. It just like does, like you said, it's so messy and so confused. And I think that's why I like the book so much, because I think it really captured that this character that's obviously grieving, massively, massively grieving about so many things. And very clearly his mother is this a huge part of it, but he's not doing things that make sense. And it's like, sometimes you're like, oh, what is he up to now? And you go, yeah, that's what people do. They just sort of, we're all sort of just bumping around doing things randomly, but we like to think, oh yes, I know what I'm doing. And I think, you know, we have, like you said, you know, after they died, you had this clarity of like, I do want to write, that's what I'm going to do. And so because we have these moments, we believe they'll always be there. Like, they're really not. Like, most of the time you are sort of bumbling along, doing your best.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I guess that's life. And I think that I'm glad that's kind of translated like that in the book, because I didn't want the main characters to unpick themselves.
Yes.
Because we spend so much of our lives kind of like analyzing everything. Yeah. And I think death, if you get in this space where that's all you're thinking about, why the things have happened the way they've happened, I don't think that's a really good space to be in.
Yeah.
So I like this idea of not unpicking everything and just accepting it.
And I think, you know, again, that's the truth of humanity, like of humans. Like, they don't always know why they're doing things, and it would be great.
Yeah.
I mean, God, you know, we've all been in relationships where people were like, why are they doing that? And like, they don't know. And that's basically also how it feels to be a parent. Like, you just have these people that you're like, why are you doing that? And they look at you like, I don't know. I don't know why I did that. And you think, oh, but I'd love you to know why. And constantly seeking that from someone, it is, you know, a well that will never fill up. It doesn't offer anything. And and I think that, yeah, particularly with grief, it can be the first time in people's life when you really learn that lesson, you know, like you can think you have so much control, or, you know, I do the right exams and I do the right job and I'm going to get these things.
Yeah.
And it's the first time it's like, yeah, there's no logic. And it's interesting to me, like you said, with your mum's death, like, not just the difference of what a death can mean to someone. Yeah. And I think, again, we try and make death equal the same for everybody. But actually,
yeah.
how someone dies, what you get beforehand, can totally affect the grief and, you know, the way you process
Definitely.
It. And of course, you know, having time with someone and it's funny though, isn't it? Because it was probably your mum's situation that made this, you know, you and your dad and your siblings go, oh, well, let's not do what happened yeah. last time. And if she hadn't
100%.
Had that, you wouldn't have found that. So it's...
No, it is. That's a very strange thing, but that's very true. What happened with my mum definitely affected what happened with my dad. I think even his response, because mm. how he didn't understand what was happening with my mum, he was in complete denial. When it came to his time, he just accepted it.
Wow.
Just completely accepted it. And it was like, you couldn't help but be completely kind of moved by his acceptance yeah. of what was happening. He never complained, not one time.
God.
With everything that was going on.
Yeah.
And it was so different from, you know, maybe it was because my mum, because it just, everything happened so quickly and it was very confusing
yeah.
and he couldn't process it. He didn't have the time to process it. And she did, because of the medication, all the painkillers that they put her on. She was not our mother.
Yeah.
She was somebody completely different. Like, it was kind of like jarring, the difference in her. She responded really poorly to the drugs.
And that's so much shock as well. And I think, yep. you know, we forget sometimes, if like we get focused on grief, that like shock is like the first, you know, level you have to get through of the game of grief.
Yeah.
Because someone dying quickly is a shock. Someone like being diagnosed very quickly is a shock. Someone, like you said, changing overnight from once it obviously got so unbearable for her body that like...
Yeah.
And then you're sort of dealing with such an extreme version of an illness, you know, which would have been obviously, you know, much more spread out and a slow deterioration.
Yeah, much, yeah.
You know, of course your dad, your poor dad. I mean, what could he have done to process that situation? Like, what could anyone have done? But,
yeah.
you know, the fact that he then, like you said, accepted himself is, yeah, it is a thing we keep coming back to. It's like touching and heartbreaking at the same time, that he had to go through that, but also that he then learned from it. Like, yeah, yeah. It's
exactly that. You know, we had the conversations with the doctors and him that it's getting closer, you know,
yeah.
you are dying and so on. And, you know, they are important conversations, and they ended up being, you know, moving conversations. And I would have thought they would have been much harder than they were.
Yeah.
But they weren't. It's not that we tried to make it kind of light of it, but I almost think we kind of relaxed into what was happening
yeah.
because that felt like the best way to help him. Because his biggest worry was that it was Kate, you know, what would happen to Kate. So that was his biggest problem. That was his major concern the whole time. So the more relaxed, we figured it out really quickly. The more relaxed we were, the more relaxed he could be.
Yeah.
And I think that was an important thing for us. So he felt that even though everything was quite intense and, you know, he is at the end of the day dying, that we were calm about it. And other people might not be able to be, and it's however everybody is however they, you know, you do the best you can do. But we were able to be quite calm and relaxed about it. And we tried to turn everything into kind of a chance to sort of connect and do simple things like eat together and have a picnic and stuff, even if it was at a table in a, you know, a rammed cafeteria in Addenbrooke's.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we'd still set it up like a picnic, and he loved it.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And it was really good fun. It was in a sense we didn't have to play it being calm.
Yeah.
Because we were just such the shock of my mum. I just felt that this can't be like this for Dad. It just, you know, I can't imagine what it feels like to know you're dying.
Yeah.
I think it must be hugely stressful
yeah.
And really frightening. So I think that my and Kate's approach was to just try and be lighthearted, try and just be normal,
yeah.
you know, quote unquote. And hopefully it worked, and which I think it did really work, because he laughed literally until he was unconscious a couple of days before. And then he, you know, as Dad did, full of surprises, woke up, you know, to die, which was, again, a huge surprise. I mean, he'd been unconscious for 24 hours.
Wow.
He completely woke up, rolled onto his side, popped his eyes open, and died.
Oh, my God.
And it was surreal, and I don't know what to say about it. I sat there and I literally, you know, said that, you know, my, you know, you are dead. You know, it's happened. It was a very weird moment, but I was surprisingly not hysterical.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking, God, what's going to happen? I was very pleased Kate wasn't there, though. I think also selfishly, partly for my own benefit, because I think I would have found it so much harder if Kate would have been really stressed and really, really emotional about, you know, and really ups, as you would be.
Yeah,
but I was actually, you know, not to sort of blow my own trumpet or anything, but I was really quite calm about the whole thing. Because I kind of just felt that, you know, this was inevitable, and it kind of happened, you know, how it happened. But it was still surreal and surprising. Not like TV.
Yeah, but that's so, like, truthfully beautiful. Like, that's how people die. Like you said, like, it's odd and confusing, and they pop their eyes open after not, you know, like you said, being unconscious for that long. And
yeah.
And I think it's just a testament to, like, to love and the relationship that you obviously had as a family, that you were able to give that to him after what happened with your mum, through nobody's, you know, nobody's fault. Just the way some people die is not as calm and peaceful as others.
It's not.
And I think that's incredible to, because not everyone learns lessons. It sounds like you learned such a lesson as a family of, like, we're not going to do that. Like, we're going to make a difference. Yeah. And that's incredible, because you know, I've spoken to people, mistakes have happened again and again and again, and to be able to be with him, and, you know, we've said this on the show a lot, but, like, I have heard story after story of people saying, like, we sat by their bedside and I went to cut a cup of tea and they died. And I spoke to Dr. Catherine Mannix, who's a palliative care consultant. She has an amazing episode, if you haven't listened, where she says, you know, we're not allowed to say it, it's not scientific, but they do sometimes wait for some people, and they wait for other people to leave. Like, that's like life. And like you said, perhaps their knowledge that you were going to be calm and okay, he wasn't alone.
Pleased he wasn't alone. Yeah,
but, like, definitely. I think it's so interesting that you said with your mum, like, she kept sending you away, and then she did die by herself. But in a way, I'm like, this sounded like she did not want her children to be worrying about her. Like,
no, I think she would have really disliked us being there. And I think we did keep getting sent away. But I think that my dad, I did kind of get the feeling that, you know, he wanted me there.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I was there.
Yeah.
I think it's been an important thing for me to experience, and it's given me kind of, I guess, a lot to think about, in the sense about what's important and what's not important in life. And I think, like you've said, it is really difficult to hold on to this idea, you know, not to sweat the small stuff and get stressed about all these things we're, like, crazily worried about, that when you're in that experience, you don't even acknowledge these tiny things in life that, you know, we can have such, you know, concerns for, until you're staring at something much larger.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I want to hold on to that, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to be in this constant, you know, position of, I suppose, being in grief, I guess. I don't know how to put it.
Yeah, it's tricky, because it's not a state that you can keep up day to day. It isn't. It's a state that it's a sort of a lesson you have to keep coming back to.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, it's a helpful thing to have in your pocket. You're like, I know that. And then sometimes every now and again, you're like, hang on a minute, I'm getting wrapped up in things that really don't matter. But you like we said, you can't live at that volume. It doesn't. It's a hard place to put yourself.
Definitely.
John, thank you so much. They sound
thank
like
you.
Beautiful people, Mary thank and David. You. And it was really nice to hear about them and your experience of grief. And as I said, the book is out now. It's incredible. It's really beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You can follow John on Twitter at John L. Ransom. That's JonLRansom. John L. Ransom on Twitter. His book, The Whale Tattoo, is available to buy now. It's an extraordinary piece of writing. I really do recommend it. It's not a huge book. It will stay with you. I definitely recommend picking it up, buying it and picking it up. You can follow us on Twitter at The Griefcast and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was recorded remotely in living rooms. It was edited by Kate Holland. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. Artwork by Jade Perkin. And stop motion animation by...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And it's love day. I think that's everything. Yes, yes, I agree with you. By now, 6 years in, I should know what credits are. And who's even getting this far anyway? If you are, thank you so much for letting this podcast slowly play out. And remember, you are not alone.